The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to Friday's 9 till noon show. It's approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 29th of November. And we have a busy show as always lined up for you. We have a panel, which I'll introduce to you very shortly. That's entertainment a little later on, and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation, of course, throughout the course of the morning. Your WhatsApps and texts, we invite them to 086 60 25000. You can send your WhatsApp voice notes to that number too, if you wish. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. And don't forget, you can watch the show. It is on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across our Facebook pages and on the X platform. Okay, let's say good morning first to Harry Walsh, former deputy editor of the Donegal News. Harry, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's great to have you with us. Richard Logue is project manager in transport in London. Good morning to you, Richard.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Did you get yourself a little pair of headphones for Black Friday?
Noise cancelling.
Okay, I hadn't seen them before. All right.
New toy.
And Mary Cole, manager of Inidney Padraig. Good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning to you, Greg. How
Thanks
are you?
So much for joining us. Well, voting is now underway in the 2024 general election. The moratorium is no longer applicable, but of course we need to be careful not to discuss things like opinion polls or attempt to influence anyone in how they might vote today. So with all that in mind, Mary, I'm just curious, how engaged were you in the election campaign? Did you find maybe even your choices changed over the course of the campaign?
I think here in Inidney Padraig, I found it very strange. I had just one of the local candidates come in to talk to us. And I found that very surprising because we're so active in the community and we deal with so many problems in the community. I thought that we would have a lot of candidates in here trying to tell us or sway us what we should be voting. But to be quite honest with you, Greg, I watched Prime Time the other night, and I must say they were like school children squabbling. And I was listening to the highlights there of the news, and listening to the young children, I would 100% agree with them that they're not clear. Some of them are telling us what they're going to do now. I just wonder why they didn't do that this past.
But that talks
years.
About. Well, we just have to be careful in what direction we're going with that. But is that where the apathy comes from? Then this sort of sense that, you know, what is the point? What's the point in voting? It's just all words.
Well, I think a lot of people would think. And in saying that, I suppose quite a few good things have happened over the years as well. So, I think people don't vote because they're not interested. They don't see change. And that creates a problem because it's everybody's democratic right to vote, and everybody should vote, because that way we never see. There's loads of people that complain all the time, but then they're not active enough to vote to change things.
Or vote to keep things the same. Whatever you choose, it won't happen unless you actually get out there and vote. Harry Walsh, I mean, you've covered numerous elections. Why is it, if you are of the view that this feels, it has felt a little bit meh, if you agree with that, I wonder why that is.
Well, funny, Greg, just listen to Mario there. It's the first time since 1990 I haven't been stuck in the middle of elections. This time I'm the outside looking in, so I'm able to take a different perspective on it. And I live up on the sticks, and I had four of the candidates calling up to the house, which maybe that's because I'm here most of the time, Greg. If I was at work, I probably wouldn't know there'd be some stuff left through the letterbox. You know,
are you sure they go, bloody hell, they're home?
Exactly. But I was thinking back to when I was a young buck. I mean, your local politicians obviously won't name parties, etc., but they used to stand outside the chapel and on the back of a lorry and give it heaps. And invariably, there was only a handful of parties. And from when the election was called until the votes were counted, neighbours didn't speak. you know, literally didn't speak because they were either A or B, you know, and now it's all moved. A lot of it's moved to social media, Greg. You know, we're not getting the blood and thunder and the roar and the shouting at one another anymore.
Interesting you say that, Harry, because I do wonder if there is so much scrutiny of every movement, every word, every action now. There is literally a phone pointing at a politician almost, or a prospective politician, any minute of every minute of the day. Sometimes it's them holding it and pointing it at themselves, right? Has that sanitized it in that really it's about avoiding a controversy rather than sort of stoking a reaction?
Massively so. I mean, back in newspaper days, you used to get an email through from, again, politician A. You'd have to go look for politician B to get a reaction to it. Nowadays, you're getting an email from 20 different politicians from all hues, and you're right. You're now not able, or you don't feel comfortable running in a particular direction because you feel you have to be politically correct and give everybody a point of view. And the upshot is there's no point of views coming across. It's just a muddled mess.
Mm. Richard, obviously you would have kept an eye on the recent elections in Britain, and now you're also obviously keeping a close eye on what's happening here in Ireland. I suppose, what do you draw from all of that?
Well, I think the one thing I draw from the whole campaign so far is that usually at this point in a campaign, one would get a sense for which party or which group of parties are in the, have got the momentum. And frankly, and like Maura, I watched the primetime debate between the leaders the other night, and I came away from that programme with no sense of any of the three of them actually landing any killer blows. And there was a lot of interruptions and squabbles, and it wasn't as well managed as it could be. But then that's often been the case on televised debates. There's always been more kind of interruptions than actual facts.
But that, just in relation to the format of that, the two presenter format, like most of the antagonism seemed to be between the moderators and the actual guests. And the impression I got is the people involved in that wanted to sort of get at each other, land a blow to some extent, but were stopped from doing so.
Yeah, they certainly were. I mean, those of us who are old enough to remember the late Brian Farrell on 7 Days prime time and all of the rest of that will know how he managed the classic debates between Charlie Haughey and Gard Fitzgerald. And whilst those debates were pretty tetchy between the two men, Brian Farrell absolutely managed it. Now, I've got a lot of time for for the current crop of presenters on RTE, but it was not the most riveting of viewing because a lot of it was just interruptions after interruptions. And I did not come away with any sense of what was it Fianna Fáil stood for, what Fine Gael stood for, what Sinn Féin stood for. It was more like just childish point scoring that you would see in a primary school debate competition, never mind a secondary school one.
Mm, okay. Well, anyway, we'll see how things will go. That's as far as we can go in that conversation, unfortunately. But listen, we'll have all weekend to dig in a little bit deeper. I just one question actually remaining in relation to that. What do you anticipate, Harry? As you say, you know, you've covered elections since the 90s. What kind of a turnout are you anticipating? I think, was it 62%? Was that in Donegal or the national figure? My brain's a wee bit muddled today. But anyway,
I think it was Donegal, Greg.
Right, 62% turnout last time out. You're perfectly right now. It's just I've got clarity all of a sudden. So, like, do we see lower than that? Do we see higher than that? What do you anticipate?
I think we'll be in around the same figure again. You know, I mean, I was reading that, you know, people are less inclined to vote if they don't believe that it can make a difference with their vote. And there's a talk of a lot of apathy with younger people, but I have a funny feeling that there'll be a decent turnout in Donegal this time around.
Maura, what do you think? I'm kind of getting that feeling too, that maybe, you know, it could be closer to 70% this time around.
Yeah, and I don't know if it'll get as high as 70, but I certainly think we'll be in around the 65 mark. You know, I know we're splitting hairs here now, but hopefully it'll be a good turnout because for obvious reasons, you know, we're going to have to live with these bucks for the next 5 years.
Right, Murray, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree totally. We're going to have to live with this. And I do hope that there is a better turnout. We just seem to have so many problems in Donegal with housing and the mica. And, you know, you really want people to go out there and vote and vote the right people and make the right choices so there is change in Donegal for the better.
All staying the same for that matter as well. There are going to be an awful lot of people who are quite content as the way things are at the moment. But anyway, listen, there's 20 candidates there. People can vote for whomever they wish, but get out and vote. You don't need your polling card. Not everyone received a polling card, but you are likely to be on the register. So go along and bring some photo ID for you just in case. There are big changes afoot in Australia in terms of social media because Australian senators have passed a world's first law that bans under 16s from having social media accounts. The legislation is set to come into force in November of 2025. It includes some of the toughest social media controls in the world and will force platforms to take reasonable steps to ensure age verification protections are in place. The law will make platforms like TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, Reddit and X liable for fines of up to £25 million if they don't systemically stop children under 16 from holding accounts. Harry Walsh, is this something you'd welcome here?
Absolutely, Greg. I think News Corp out in Australia, they run the campaign with the slogan, "Let them be kids." And I think that really sums it up quite simply, those four words, you know, because again, we're all of an age and stage. Some of us older than others on this panel, but when life was nice and simple, you know, it was, and we could argue possibly too simple. But wasn't it great when you didn't know whether you're tall, small, fat, thin, et cetera, et cetera? Well, sorry, you didn't know personally, but you weren't reminded of it on social media and what have you. So I do, Greg. I think they have to draw a line in the sand. And having lived in Australia for a couple of years when I was a younger man, they don't do grey areas. They're black and white, and they're very strong on this. And I would agree with them on it.
I wonder, will it be a domino effect? Do you think other countries might follow?
Well, I suppose like everything else, they'll see what sort of reaction is, you know, that filters down in Australia first of all. But I do believe that France and certain states within the United States have some laws in place, you know, so it probably will, but we'll see how it works down under first.
Yeah, I think, Harry, the resistance might come from fully grown adults because this sounds like you might need your identification to access social media in Australia going forward, because how else could you ensure everyone is over 16 unless everyone proves their ID? And I think, and particularly for those, you know, free speech activists and others, and Elon Musk will have something to say about this, I'm sure, I think the resistance is actually going to come from more from adults who want to be able to slag everyone off with little to no consequence, and not 16 and unders.
That's a fair point, Greg, and it'll probably drive it deeper underground as well. You know, where there's a will, there's a way, and particularly younger people are very good on the World Wide Web and how to get into it and how to get through it and how to work around it. So, you know, there will be ways and means around it, whatever comes into place.
Richard Logue, what do you think? Makes sense, does it, or...?
Fully behind it, Greg, and I'll go further than that. Social media is plagued with anonymous trolls. Now, having run myself for council a couple of times, I would have had a few people who weren't brave enough to put their own names to some of the things they would have said about me on social media. And I think the time is gone where we should be tolerating anonymous trolls. I think there was talk at some point, I think, about maybe having some kind of a bill in the Doyle about making sure that any social media account was verified. So, and I would fully agree with Harry. I think the whole, we may talk about this later on the call anyway, but I think the whole issue around young people's mental health, is a big part of that is online bullying, which is so much easier. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, bullying involved basically a few digs in the ribs in the back of the playground, but now it goes much, much further than that.
And you had respite when you got home. You know what I mean? Like, if you were unfortunate,
you'd have been told to toughen up when you got home. But anyway,
but at least it wasn't in your pocket or when you went to bed, continuing on your phone screen.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Greg. And I really do think, you know, where the Australians have led on this, what, you know, we should certainly follow, you know, suit. I mean, you know, we led the way on the smoking ban, the plastic bag tax. I don't see why we shouldn't pick up what the Aussies are doing on this. I think it's a very, very good move.
Yeah, Mary, what's your view on it all?
Yeah, I agree totally. I think it would be an absolute fabulous thing if that was here. We see all the time, we see so many of the children. We see a lot of it here. How the children suffer from bullying online, how mental health problems. We run so many workshops on anxiety, on kids suffering from mental depression, mental health, and especially self-harm. This is something very new in our community. And a lot of the bullying is online. It is all on social media. And I think it would be great for our children. Again, I like that, let the children be. Will the adults
and I'm thinking on certain platforms other than others, will they be agreeable to, you know, have their ID scanned? Because that's the only way, surely, you can actually disprove or prove someone's age. And that means everybody using social media, I presume, in Australia is going to have to verify their ID.
And you'll always have people that won't want to do that, you know, but responsible adults, responsible parents, I think, won't have a problem with that, because at the end of the day, all we want to do as parents and grandparents is protect our children. And I think this is a really good way to start. You see in the local schools here now, where they're not allowing the kids to have their phone during school hours. And I think started to realise that this is creating such a problem in the classrooms. And I think I would love now if Ireland would take a step in the direction of the Aussies and run with this.
Yeah, both Richard and Mary have referenced, you know, the difficulties facing young people today. And there's a study out today, coincidentally, concerns about body image, substance abuse and inadequate physical exercise are among some of the reasons cited by people who believe the mental health of younger people has deteriorated. This according to a new Red Sea poll. It also found that one in five blamed pressure from parents and more than a third suggested poor sleep, with a similar number naming academic stress, including the Leaving Cert. The poll was commissioned by the youth mental health organisation Spunad. Not in any way to diminish what young people may be experiencing, but I would like to pose the question, and I'll stay with you on this, Mary. Is life more difficult now for younger people, or perhaps we as guardians and parents and caregivers, are we maybe not instilling enough resilience in our youth? I was in a school very recently and there were three or four well-being classes per week, and sort of, you know, two on a foreign language. You know, an awful lot of time is sitting down, sort of talking about feelings. What's your view?
I think there's a bit of both there. You know, definitely, I think we see a lot more children struggling. We know of a lot more children that are struggling. In the past number of weeks, we have run two workshops for parents with children that self-harm. So that everything seems to be sort of, children seem to suffer a lot more. And we hate to go back to the COVID, and we hate to go back to what that brought, you know, the isolation and kids. That none of that really helped. But I think when it comes to anxiety in children, I've never seen as many children suffering from anxiety. Now, with parents, some parents find it very difficult to reprimand their children. Like it is a difficult time, you know, because a lot of parents now I see, and I could get maybe a lot of people wouldn't be happy with this, but a lot of parents now want the children to be their friends. They don't do parenting. And I've been working here for almost 20 years and I've seen big changes on how parents parent. And I think it's trying to build resilience in children to make sure that the children go out there, they're confident, there's less bullying, less social media. I really wouldn't want to be growing up in this age. I think they have a tough time. I think the kids have a tough time.
And I think too, there's this shock when it's time to leave the home and go to college or university or what have you, because,
absolutely,
you know, Harry Walsh, I'll bring you in on this at this point.
I'm smiling here, Greg, because my mother was a nurse, my wife's a nurse, and my two sisters are nurses. And we didn't do flus and stuff unless your head was hanging off you. You just had to get up and get out. And I do accept it was a different time. But you're right. The art of conversation is nearly going out of young people nowadays as well. You look at any group, I know it's a generalization, but they have their mobile phones in front of the mother and some sort of social media apparatus. Years ago, you sat around, you talked to one another, and you talked to your parents. So there is a bit of both. You know, they're a bit mollycoddled. Well, certainly, they're very mollycoddled in many respects. And there's a sense of entitlement, you know, because years ago, if your friend had a nice pair of runners, you went and got a wee job to yourself or tried to get the money together, runners back together. Now on social media, it's someone's got three pairs of them and then somebody else wants four pairs of them. And there's a lot of pressure involved there as well. So there's definitely a sense of entitlement from younger people.
It's funny Mary referenced it too, Harry. I found myself in that situation whereby, you know, you want to do the right thing and be authoritative or yes. reprimand or punish teenagers, right? But you're also afraid that they might come to some harm as a result Correct. Of it. Like, you actually are, I don't know if it's a reality or a perception, but you're like, well, what if I say something and they go into that room and something happens? So I was scared sometimes to do what probably is the right thing. And I did all right, actually. I've got great boys, don't get me wrong. But you know where I'm coming from, Harry?
No, absolutely. I mean, again, it's a doomsday scenario, but suicide. We wouldn't have heard much of suicide growing up, but now it seems, unfortunately, far too common. And you're right, it runs through your head when little Johnny comes to you asking for something and you say no, you know, like your parents done before you, go to your room or do your homework or what have you. And then you read somewhere the next day that somebody, God forbid, has taken their own life, and you go, well, what happened if... And that's what back to the mollycoddle, but they have to get a wee bit of toughness. I mean, Richard mentioned earlier on about the schoolyard and a box in the nose and the first one to draw blood, that was the end of that. That's not necessarily right either. But at the same time, there was a bit of kind of manning up and toughening up that doesn't seem to be inherent in young people nowadays. There's no toughness to them. Again, it's a generalization, but they don't have to be tough because they can be these trolls on social media. They can say this and do that and never have to put their head above the parapet at all.
Yeah, Richard, your view, please.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate. I grew up in a very loving home with my parents. But as I mentioned earlier on, there was little sympathy for, I suppose, complaining about things. My father's attitude was pretty robust. Well, if you're not happy about it, do something about it, which is the kind of the mantra I've taken to my own life. And I think, Moira, you were saying about parents not necessarily being friends with their children. I mean, we're very, thank God, I have two fabulous grown-up children myself. But, you know, you have to have boundaries. And I think for any friendship, relationship, or anything like that, having clear defined boundaries is really, really important.
I think it does help prepare
you for the adult life, and like, it's a tough world out there.
I would say there's a lot of people listening to this now that would have grown up with their mum and dad, and then they have children of their own, and they see how their mum and dad are with the grandchildren. And they're like, who the bloody hell is this? I don't recognise this person. How is he sitting on granddad's knee? I never sat in that man's knee in my life. And I wonder, is that sort of, you know, the older school parents didn't have that sort of a friendly relationship. The love was there, Richard, but the boundaries were there.
I know the boundaries are there and the love was there. I'm just lucky that, you know, that was all good. And you're dead right. When my children were little, my late parents, God rest both of them, you know, were fabulous grandparents. And I have lovely photos and videos of my father playing with a little Fisher-Price telephone with my son and all the getting...
Do you have any of him playing with the Fisher-Price toy with you?
Well, you see, we didn't have a Fisher-Price telephone.
Yeah, I know, but you know the point.
In our house when I grew up. But anyway, Sinéad Gaylella.
Yeah. Richard, just staying with you on this, I was, and I'll tell you, it's not just really necessarily about the young people's mental health, because the reason I'm interested in talking about this is that I want to ensure that we're doing the right thing in our schools and outside of schools to actually, you know, give people the best start in life. I was speaking to one major employer and one person very high up in education in the Northwest region. And both of them says that one of the greatest challenges in terms of dealing with recently qualified people is the lack of resilience. The the workplace is like, well, what, hold on a second, this isn't not what I'm used to. People are, you know, people are competitive, people are tough, people speak straight. And we're seeing that generation coming through now. Again, not across the board, but they noted it as one of the main problems, that people aren't the finished product by the time they've left education and come into the workforce.
Do you know what? You've hit the nail on the head, and it so happens I'm involved with a group here in England setting up a proposed GCSE qualification in project skills. And that is exactly the discussion that we as a group are talking about. In other words, when you're, I mean, I would have had CVs from people coming in from work, and they, you know, come in from school, you take them in from school, they're not at all prepared for anything. A lot of them, they don't know how to write you know, a document, they don't know how to present, they have little understanding of budgeting. So what we're trying to do is to push the dial, and there is a curriculum review here in England which is just about in the middle of completing. We've been trying to sort of push for more really, I suppose, work-related skills that somebody
can
come in.
Well, can I ask you one other thing? If you noticed too, because maybe they have the qualification, there's plenty of attitude there. There's just not the skill set necessarily to back it up. Is that something that you've come across?
That's exactly what we're trying to do with this proposed GCSE, Greg, is to actually enable young people to actually hit the ground running in the workplace, and, you know, introduce the ability to be A, resilient, and B, show initiative. And I think that's really important. I've had so many young people coming in, starting, who work, you know, when in my working environment, oh, what do you want me to do now? You know, and you need to have a bit more kind of, I suppose, preparedness for what the working world demands. And I also, you know, we touched on parenting and about, you know, the need to, yeah, the same, you know, to be able to face challenges, because it is a tough world out there.
Yeah, and Harry, the people I was speaking to also said that what they're finding themselves having to do, because there's a lot of vacancies in this area, is target the retraining of suitably qualified adults, because they're not so sure of the conveyor belt newly qualified people being actually able to function effectively and contribute positively to the workplace. So it's something we have to keep an eye on, Harry. And it's clearly, obviously, Britain's ahead of us in that regard, according to what Richard's saying there.
I was interested to listen to Richard, because, I mean, when we left school, civil service was, you know, you kind of went to civil service, or you got a job as a teacher or a guard, or, you know, with them staple jobs. But you're effectively in the same job for your career. And nowadays, certainly in recent times, towards the end of my career in the newspaper industry, people were coming in on Monday and were gone by the end of the month, because I suppose for different reasons, they didn't have the stickability, didn't need to have the stickability, because there was other jobs out there. Whereas we kind of, I suppose, but like, obviously, that's not a very good comparison. But like, maybe marriage. You know, years ago, people got married and they stayed with one another through thick and thin, and kind of the good days and bad days and so on. Now they seemingly, you can get divorced, you know, 10 minutes off, you get married, things aren't going well. The same in the job sphere, that, you know, people went and got a job, and it became a career, and it's a pride that they tried to work up through, you know, as far as they could in that particular job. But nowadays, I'd say the people just, if they don't like it, they're gone. And, you know, maybe they're right, Greg.
So everything's disposable, effectively.
Correct.
Is kind of
and maybe they're right. Maybe we, the agents, is kind of stuck with the one job for 30 years or what have you. You know?
It's a bit late for you to tell me that now. Why? Where were you when I was 18?
exactly.
Mary, what's your view? Come back to you on
this. I think, you know, in the community and voluntary section, you're not really looking at young people coming into these kind of jobs. You're more looking at people that were long-term unemployed, or people that have been paid off from their jobs, and, you know, they would come in then. And I suppose what I see there is, especially people that have been long-term unemployed, they lack confidence now. You know, they lack confidence in themselves. They lack confidence coming in, and it takes a while for them to do things on their own initiative. You know, you have to kind of hold their hand for a while and show them how these things work. But in fairness now, once they come into the community involuntary, they see of parts of what we do, they settle in very quickly. So the young people, I agree with Harry and Richard there, you know, the young people are not prepared properly.
And you, Mary, you and loads of other organisations, but not least at Inad Ní Fhadraig, you know, you talked about some of the classes and the schemes and the supports that are there for younger people. And that means, like we all do, you see the problems that are there. Like, we do focus an awful lot on getting extra supports in. I just wonder if we also should look a little bit more on what is causing this. You know, why are we seeing an increase? I mean, if it is the social media, well, then maybe we need to follow Australia in that regard. Or is it something else? Is it what's happening in schools? As I said a little earlier on, an awful lot of focus on well-being compared to maybe other subjects. Every school's different, don't get me wrong. And I'm not saying those aren't important, but we need to make sure we're getting it right, Mary, because we are the custodians here.
I agree totally. You know, sometimes we're very fond of feeding the problem instead of getting to the root of the problem. And we had this discussion during the week when it came to food banks, and we would deliver, as does a lot of community and voluntary, we deliver a lot of food banks. And we said, what we need is the money. What we need is the resources to find out what's causing this problem, you know. And that is the same with mental health. It's the same with social media. What causes the problem? What's the root cause? Make sure that people get counselling? Should they go to MABS, help them with budgeting? We need to get to the root of the problems, because I feel that we continue to feed all the problems, and we have to do a lot more than that.
Yeah. Richard, just finally, in relation to this group that you're involved with, is it an industry thing with a view to making representations with educators, or is it educators around the table as well, or who's involved, what's going
on? It's both. So just a quick description of what we're doing. I'm involved in one of the city livery companies, the Worshipful Company of Educators. We're basically a voluntary group of people involved in education. I'm a school governor, so I would describe myself as an interested amateur. And then others are in industry. I have a colleague who's just completed her doctorate on skills. That's my good pal, Carol Campbell, who I think might be listening in. And we've also got a number of people from industry and people who've been involved in putting together qualifications. And the consensus that we drew very quickly when we started looking at this was that a lot of young people were coming out of school and into university and really not that prepared. In England, it's not the same system as we have in Ireland, where we have a much broader curriculum for secondary education. In England, it gets very narrowed down to specialist subjects, as it does in the north, of course, with the A-levels. And that does mean that you become a school leaver, can be very specialist in the subject, but then they don't have that much broader education. So what we're looking to do with the Project Skills GCSE is to bring a qualification which is both academic and vocational, which is quite unique. And our objective is to allow young people to come straight into the workforce. And they essentially set tasks. So they would be given projects to manage, whatever scale of project. It could be something as complex as organizing a concert, or it could be something very straightforward. But nevertheless, it's about understanding how to pitch for funding, how to be able to present, but also how to be able to balance budgets, understand money. So it's quite, the objective is to have very rounded young people to come out at the end of that process.
Mm. Or it's not cherry picking, is it, Richard?
No, I don't think it's cherry picking at all. What we're trying to do is to get as broad an education into young people as we possibly can. And that's really to make them productive as soon as they hit the workforce.
All right, fascinating. Okay, stay with us, Richard. Stay with me, Mary. Stay with me, Harry. Back after these. A caller says, I totally agree about resilience. Parenting is difficult. Generalisation here. Nowadays, parents are both out working, and the guilt felt that sometimes makes parents give in to demands for their children. As a child, I had the luxury of my mum being at home, and there was a time for lots of conversation and decisions to be made. Life's very different today from what it was 20 years ago. We may be richer in monetary terms, but time poorer. School can't fix all social ills. That's a well thought out view from Kate. And like what I've seen in the past, and I have to be careful not to talk about specifics, but we've had things that parents don't want their children to go to or attend or do, and sort of the parents, rather than sort of saying the children can't go to it, do it, or whatever, get onto the likes of Highland Radio to say it shouldn't be happening at all, because it's easier if it's not on. It's easier if it's not on than to actually try and parent to say don't go, if that makes sense. All right. The big problem with young people nowadays is drugs. How much of it is around? I mean, young people, I think, and any of you jump in here, I think it's unfair because most young people don't drink. Most young people don't drink and most young people don't take drugs. It is a problem, Harry, but I don't think it's the root cause of what we're talking about now, because most children don't, really, if the truth be told. So it is an issue, but I don't think it's the cause of what we're talking about today.
No, I agree with you. I think that's a lazy generalisation, you know, because you're right. If people want to find drink, they want to find drugs, they will find it. And again, make ourselves out to be four dinosaurs here. But, you know, we would have found ways to particularly drink from a younger age. You know, drugs might have been as prevalent when we were younger. But at the same time, you hear it's on every street corner. It's in every village, in every town in the country. It is, but it always has been. If you want something, you'll find it. And certainly if you don't want it, you won't find it. We mentioned earlier on about young people and body image and what have you. I mean, an awful lot of young people now, more so, dare say, may they, don't drink because they're into body image and into looking after themselves and the healthy lifestyles, which has to be applauded too.
Yeah. There is pressure, even though, you know, as you get older, there's pressure to conform to the body stereotypes.
Oh God, there
have
is,
I Googled, just... have I ever Googled what's a dad bod? I'm not answering that question.
well, and again, Greg, back to an earlier point, to throw me mother on the bus again.
Do women like dad bods? I never Googled that either. Sorry, Harry, go on, go back to your lovely mum.
When I was looking to go out to the grill at 17, you'd get the line back to you, Jesus Christ, you're 17, and then 2 minutes later you do something stupid. For God's sake, you're almost 18.
Yeah.
So it depended, you know. And I think we've all done that. Yeah, you know, so
exactly.
We move the rules to.
Oh yeah, if you to get off that wall, will you? If you fall off that, I'll kill you, or something along those lines. It's the same stuff, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly.
Chatting to my two teenagers and my 22-year-old, who all voted this morning. Most of their friends have no interest in voting, and a lot aren't even registered. Well, that's it. You know, I mean, it's how do you engage? How do you engage the youth? And I got involved in a debate up at Loreto last week, and the young people were incredibly engaged, but it is kind of like a group and not necessarily a representation of all people of that age. Right. Maybe this is in the same space. People are being urged not to buy e-scooters, scramblers or quad bikes for children this Christmas. Now, I get scramblers and quad bikes, right? But as part of new laws introduced in May, people must be at least 16 years old to legally use an e-scooter. They're also banned from footpaths. We need to maybe educate the e-scooter drivers to tell them that. And users are not allowed to carry passengers. Very sadly, though, 4 e-scooter riders were killed and 117 were seriously injured on Irish roads between the 1st of January 2020 and the 31st of December 2023. I mean, do you back, Mary, the RSA's call for parents not to buy likes of e-scooters for young people? Or again, are they being... You know, are they being deprived of maybe having a little bit of fun in a responsible way? I don't know. What's your view?
Greg, after this show, the young people will think that there's 3 Grinches on this, you know, because we're saying no to everything. But again, I totally agree. I do see a lot of this, probably because we live in the countryside. You see a lot of young people with e-scooters in particular, because they're cheaper than the quads. And so you see a lot of young people, no helmets.
But are they any different to a bike? Are they anything different to a push bike?
Well, they're a lot faster, I think. You know, they're a lot faster. And you know, at that age, kids are not really taught the rules of the road. They're not really thought, well, you know, if you come to a junction and you've watched this, you need to do all these things. And, you know, there's safety measures required for all these things. I know a number of weeks ago, I was out and about and I seen this young lad doing wheelies on a quad. I rang his granny right away, and I told on him.
No, I'd agree with Quads. I would agree with Quads, and, and that's great. But I just had, like, I was never off the road. We were always on the roads on our bikes when we were younger. We had so much freedom and so much fun. You know, and I know we're not talking about push bikes. I just, I don't know, there's something about... And then, of course, you know, the obviously the injuries and deaths are terrible, but that's maybe another set of statistics being used to discourage a different bit of behaviour, if that makes sense. I don't know. Richard, am I an outlier on this one? What's your view?
Not really, and I'm going to try not to be a Grinch on this one. it's not that easy, unfortunately.
Can we get a fun young panel next week, Caroline? Because these are doing my head in here.
The old fart. Anyway,
did you know what said the old fart brigade? I never said that, Caroline. Richard said that, not me. Go on, Richard.
No, I think, look, if people want to spend their money on buying e-scooters for the young people, great. But I think actually some basic understanding of the rules of the road. Now, when I was about 10, we had a cycling proficiency test, and we were given a copy of the rules of the road, and we were examined. I mean, it was all run by the local council, but we were examined and we were expected to understand
proper education,
basic stuff, traffic lights, road signs, speed limits, whatnot. So, you know, let's, by all means, you know, let young people use these e-scooters and whatnot, quad bikes, if it's, you know, insurable. It sounds like a bit of an insurance nightmare to me.
And my concern with quad bikes is the weight of them and what have you. I get that, and I haven't fully formed my view on the e-scooters. It just feels to me it's like, what's left for them to do here? Is this why their face is stuck in the phones all the time? Because we're protecting them from doing absolutely anything.
Yeah, but I think maybe ensure there's some basic competency in understanding the rules of the road before they get let loose. And certainly if there was an insurance requirement, that would tighten things up a lot, but then that would probably stop a lot of people from accessing the e-scooters. Mm-hmm. But certainly to be, you're expected as a cyclist to be a responsible user of the road. There are actually laws in the rules of the road that actually say you have to have lights and reflectors and all that in a bicycle.
But not a helmet, strangely.
Well...
not in this country. You're not obliged to have a helmet on a bike.
It's a personal choice, isn't it? And I'm aware of the controversy. Personally, I wear a helmet. That's my choice because I don't want to have my head smashed on the road if I fell off my bike. And I have fallen off my bike a couple of times, and it's actually saved me. But, yeah, there are people out there who feel it's an infringement of their personal freedoms.
Yes, you know. Which is it's a overreaching opinion, I think, that. Harry, what's
I draw the line at high-vis. I think, you know, we're going to go down the road of having to wear high-vis when you walk in the street? Nah.
Really? Because there's actually... It's interesting you should say that, because we did have a debate, and I was interviewed someone who was opposed to being forced to wear high-vis at night. It was a fascinating conversation. Harry, what's your view? Do you think the RSA are right in this area, focusing mainly on the e-scooters, or whatever you want to talk about, Harry?
Yeah, no. Sadly, I have to agree with Mayor. They are right. I mean, they're not a toy. They're not appropriate for children, and they're not safe for kids. I mean, that's plain and simple. We mentioned bikes earlier on, and we didn't mention the Lycra to go to high vis, but you know, they're all wearing the Lycra, what have you. But a bicycle can go to a fair rate of knots as well. You fall off it, you bang your knee, etc., etc. But as you said from the outset, Greg, there were four e-scooter riders killed last year. And 17 seriously injured. I mean, you could probably find stats to say the four cyclists.
The sad thing is I fear forcing these tiny little vehicles onto the roads and off the footpaths. I'm not saying they should be on the footpaths either. I think it's actually going to exacerbate those figures. Harry Walsh, it's been brilliant having you on the show. You'll come back soon, I hope.
I will, Greg.
Thank you so very much indeed. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care of yourself. It's always a pleasure. Richard Logue, Project Manager at Transport London. Thank you so much for your time.
Just a quick one.
Go ahead.
Troy Gallagher is listening in London, and he's just sent me this message. He says, I've organised a Donegal Diaspora weekend with councillors, politicos and people from home watching Highland's 12-hour coverage on YouTube with Greg, John McAteer, Paddy and Doreen. Sky News and BBC election coverage has nothing on Highland.
Do you know what? So I love that guy. I love that guy. Cheers. Take care of yourself, Richard. God bless you. Bye-bye. Last but certainly not least, Mary Coyle. Always a pleasure. Have a lovely weekend. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much, okay. Greg, can I just get one word in there as well? We launched our community bus here yesterday, and I want to say a big thank you to Moira Brennan, Donegal Person of the Year, and everybody that helped us fundraise, Erahas, who gave us the insurance, free insurance for the wow. first years, which was lovely. Kieran Roti, Better Letter Science, everybody that helped, thank you so much.
Well done to you. Thanks so much, Mary, and fair play to everyone there. Okay, back with the weather.